A family of toxic chemicals, once used around many military bases and industrial sites, has become an environmental management priority. Perfluoroalkyl and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, are sometimes called forever substances because they're resistant to heat and extremely hard to break down. While this was useful in creating, say, firefighting foam and waterproofing agents, PFAS are so potent that even trace amounts can be dangerous, and there are literally thousands of them. We'll find out more about PFAS, efforts to address contamination, health concerns, and cleanup next on Media Meat. Welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are Michigan Department of Environmental Quality District Supervisor for Drinking Water and Municipal Assistance, Chuck Thomas, Marquette County Health Department Environmental Health Director, Patrick Jacuzzo, and joining us via Zoom, Whitewater Associates Lab Director, Betty Primo. Welcome. Let's get a sense of the organizations and expertise represented. Chuck, in 2017, Michigan launched a state PFAS response team, the first multi-agency action team among states. The effort came about to protect drinking water. 10 state departments make up the team. What's the DEQ's role in addressing PFAS, and where does the UP fit in?
Okay. Recently, our new governor issued an executive order reinstating the MPART, and in that executive order, she
MPART is the Michigan
PFAS
response team.
Action team.
Okay, action team. Got it.
And in the executive order, she she formalized DEQ's support of the MPART and actually put DEQ as the lead agency for the MPART team.
Okay.
And what our DEQ's role, of course, is to investigate areas of concern and try to identify where there is PFAS problems.
Okay.
And then also try to work with local agencies and other state agencies to find remedies to solve those problems for those people.
Okay. The emphasis here on problems. Not all PFAS occurrences involve a problem. Is that what I understand you're saying here?
Well, any contamination, it could be considered a problem.
Okay.
But we do have, there is a health advisory level that has been issued, and I think we'll get into that in a little bit.
Good. Okay. Patrick, with concentrations of PFAS turning up almost everywhere we look, there's more focus on potential human health effects. The county health department's role in addressing PFAS.
Well, the County Health Department works in conjunction with the DEQ and the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services to address any health concerns that might come forth. Our agency also regulates non-community public water supplies and private water supplies that may be impacted or tested.
Okay.
So we serve as also, you know, an advisory to water supply owners and concerned citizens with regard to actions that they may need to take.
I see. Betty, you're a founder and CEO of Whitewater Associates, an environmental consulting firm located in Amasa, that's in Iron County, with some 30 years' experience in soil and water testing. Are PFAS a common target or finding in your work, and how do you rate them as an issue?
Well, we first became familiar with the PFAS compounds several years ago in a project we had with EPA. EPA does studies on what they call unregulated contaminants. These are contaminants that are not on the list of regulated compounds at this time, but they want to find out, are they there? And if they are, what concentrations are they in?
Okay.
So we were involved with studies mostly in the northeast part of the United States, in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, where there has been quite a lot of this kind of contamination found. And then just most recently with our laboratory in Michigan.
Any idea?
And, you know, in terms of how I rate them, because it is an emerging contaminant, it's really hard to tell yet. Toxicity levels are still being studied to determine what are the toxic levels of these compounds. They're very persistent, and they're everywhere. And we all have PFAS compounds in our system.
Okay, so the basic effort right now is primarily an effort to understand them?
Yes, it's an effort to understand where they are and in what quantities.
Okay. The Environmental Protection Agency has identified PER and polyfluoroalkyl substances as an emerging contaminant. Interesting cautionary comment there. It's been used in multiple industries, such as plating, tanneries, clothing manufacture. They've also been used in firefighting foams, food packaging, cleaning products, and various other products. PFAS have been used around the world since the 1940s by now. Can we get a better description of what they are as a class of chemicals and why they're so common? Can you, you want to take that, Chuck?
Sure. The class of chemicals what is, again, the PER and polyfluoroalkyls. They're a carbon-based chemical. They're a chain. If I'll get into technical here.
No, that's right.
And what makes them so unique is that they are both polar and nonpolar at the same time, which means that they can dissolve in water very readily, but they also they also are used very useful in firefighting because of the fact that they're not only do they will also not dissolve in some situations and cause more of a suppression.
Okay, so what we're talking about is a very versatile kind of material, which might explain why they're so common.
That is true, and the other thing about them is that they are chemically have very tight bonds. So they don't break down in the environment very easily.
Them apart.
They last a long time. And then from a toxic standpoint, they're what's known as a bioaccumulative. So once you get them in your system, they keep and continue to add up in your system.
Okay, wow. Sources note related substances are still being used by some manufacturers and find their way into waterways and waste disposal sites around the country. I read one statistic that said a couple of million Michigan residents are drinking water from affected systems, but apparently that's a mistake?
Well, we don't have a number. We don't have any way to pinpoint the number of a population. Mm-hmm. We do know that there was a little bit more than 1,750 public water supplies sampled in the second half of 2018 around the state.
Okay.
Basically, all of the community water supplies and all of the schools and daycares, they had their own water supply wells.
All right.
And of those water supplies that are sampled, 115 had PFAS compounds detected at any level, from just barely detectable. And of all of those 115, only two public water supplies had PFAS compounds detected above the established the EPA-established health advisory level.
Now, that's two in the state of Michigan or two in the UP?
Two in the state of Michigan.
In the state of Michigan.
None in the UP.
None in the UP. Okay. Okay, well, that's certainly enlightening. Patrick, what are specific health effects associated with PFAS? How are these toxins absorbed?
Well, PFAS, as you had mentioned, are used in all kinds of products, from dental floss to water repellents on your clothing, firefighting foams, food packaging. So the way they're absorbed is primarily through ingestion. You're not going to absorb it generally through your skin. They're on carpet treatments in your home, so household dust can contain PFAS.
So if you were to brush against this stuff, it won't necessarily.
No, or you know, if you're in contact with water, generally you're not going to have any absorption through your skin. It's ingestion. So.
Okay.
The CDC has done studies, and there are background levels of PFAS in most citizens of the country and the world.
Okay.
The health effects are under investigation right now. I mean, there is some indication in the science that there are some concerns with thyroid function, immunogenic effects, cancers potentially for kidneys, testicular cancer. But right now, they're trying to develop more robust studies to really understand what the overall effects are and at what concentrations would be the greatest concern for health.
Which probably brings us to this next question. There seems to be no question that there's some, they can be dangerous. we probably haven't banned or replaced them because they're just so ubiquitous. Is that right? They're just used so much.
Well, most of the studies that are out there are on two compounds, PFOS or PFOA and PFOS. Okay. So there are, as Chuck had mentioned, there's thousands of these compounds, and they're not well characterized. So understanding or even testing for them is difficult. There's not a lot of testing standards out there currently that can even detect some of these things. And there's more studies that need to be done to understand the overall effects and prevalence of the issue.
Okay. Betty, if you were called upon to look for these, would you have to devise some technique to find them, or do you have what you need pretty much in terms of the way you test anyway to find them?
Yeah, EPA has developed a standard method for analyzing these compounds. It's using a technology called liquid chromatography and tandem mass spectroscopy. The instrument technology is complex, and the analysis is, and it's an expensive test. These compounds are measured in parts per trillion. For those that are used to that, nanograms per liter, it's kind of the same, similar level of detection as we currently measure mercury, for example. So there is standardized methods that have been developed that laboratories are now using. And for example, in the state of Michigan, they're chasing and really focusing on 24 of these compounds.
Okay, I see. Michigan U.S. Senator Gary Peters helped pass a law that allowed alternatives in firefighting foam. Apparently, there was some rule they had to use the firefighting foam, and then they managed to change that to include some alternatives that would do the same job. Are PFAs being replaced, do you think, generally? Do you see any evidence that PFAs are being replaced a lot because of some of these cautions?
Yeah. The two PFA compounds.
PFAS, I'm sorry.
The PFAS compounds that have the health advisory level set for, mm-hmm. PFOS and PFOA.
Okay.
Their manufacture has been banned in the United States.
Okay.
They're no longer being manufactured in the United States. The companies have come up with an alternative chemical compound that is still a PFAS compound, but it's not the same.
Does it seem quite as dangerous?
Studies are out on that.
Okay.
There have not been any studies done, so we don't know what the toxicological effect of the replacement chemicals are.
I see.
But indications are that they will likely be less of an environmental problem, but nobody knows yet for sure.
I see. Michigan was reportedly the first state to set a limit on PFAS at 70 parts per trillion. Is that correct? I mean, Betty mentioned they're in trillions, parts per trillion. Is it 70 parts per trillion?
It is.
Okay, and that seems tiny, but it said, one of the articles I read said a thimbleful of the stuff in an Olympic-sized swimming pool is enough to make people sick. Is the standard adequate, and is it realistic? There seems to be some debate as to whether or not it would be higher. Go ahead.
I guess I would like to clarify, you know, the 70 parts per trillion regulatory standard in Michigan is for groundwater contamination cleanup under Part 201.
Okay.
Drinking water standard is still an EPA health advisory, so it's non-regulatory. So there hasn't, you know, been enough evidence apparently at this point to have a strong regulatory standard. It's more of a health advisory on the drinking water side.
Okay. Because I've seen some, you know, I've seen higher parts per trillion kinds of standards, but I'm not really sure how the standard got set in the first place.
I'm going to handle it.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The EPA and the ATSDR, the Agency for Toxic, the federal agency, mm-hmm. looked at toxicological studies and developed a standard of 70 parts per trillion for PFOS and PFOA.
Okay.
And a combined for the two, if you have both of them,
yeah.
of also 70. And it's a health advisory, level only. It's not a regulated, you know, it's not a regulatory number that we can.
And it only affects the ones that have been banned, right? In the United States?
Yes.
Okay.
Those two chemicals.
Those two chemicals. There hasn't been any, the federal government, the federal EPA has not set any health advisory levels for any other PFAS compound as of today.
Okay. Well, how is it monitored? Go ahead.
For the rest of that, the question you had just asked, also as part of MPAR, the governor had appointed a science advisory panel.
Okay.
And they came out with a report in December, and according to their review of all the available studies out there with regard to health effects, their opinion is that 70 parts per trillion in drinking water may be too liberal, that maybe it should be less than that. But the exact amount is not really well established.
Okay. How is it monitored, and how difficult is it to test for? I bet he said it's pretty expensive.
The sampling protocol, because PFAS compounds are in all kinds of things that we use daily, the sampling protocol is very rigorous. You have to be very, very careful on how you collect a water sample, because you may do cross-contamination just by having something on your body that's giving off some PFAS.
Okay.
It's used in a lot of cosmetics. It's used in a lot of hair products. It's used in clothing treatment, so the sampling protocols are very, very particular. And then, as Betty described, the laboratory methodology has been established by the EPA, but it is a very, I want to say, precise. It has very specific and rigorous things they have to go through, and the equipment's very expensive.
I should mention that the Whitewater Laboratory is EPA certified. Is that right, Betty?
Well, we're DOD certified and NELAC certified. That would be the correct designation.
Okay, just making sure. I'd like to remind our viewing audience, and especially our radio listeners, that we're talking about perfluoroalkyl and polyfluoroalkyl substances with Michigan Department of Environmental Quality District Supervisor for Drinking Water and Municipal Assistance, Chuck Thomas, Marquette County Health Department Environmental Health Director, Patrick Chicuzzo, and joining us via Zoom, Whitewater Associates Lab Director, Betty Primo. Is there a standard method of removal and remediation? I've seen references to something called electrochemical oxidation, which apparently can reduce it to harmless components.
It seems like activated carbon is the most effective method for removal at this point. But with whatever removal method you use, you have to be conscious of the waste stream, because those chemicals bind in the filter, so to speak, or in the waste stream of that. And incineration is really the only way to break down the PFAS chemicals to a level where they're not of concern.
I see. Okay.
And I would like to add to that that the incineration temperatures have to be very high. It's not like you can take something and stick it in your own furnace and have it burn. The incineration temperatures to destroy most of these PFAS compounds is over 1,800 degrees.
Okay. Wow. Michigan PFAS sites are identified by groundwater findings. I've seen a number of lists of things that are potential sites. What are you working with as a list for the Upper Peninsula?
We have two known sites of groundwater contamination in the Upper Peninsula.
Okay.
The K.I. Sawyer Air Force Base, and then the Escanaba Defense Fuel Site, which is where the fuel storage tanks were on the shore of Little Bay du Nac that provided that held the fuel for the Air Force Base, or shipped up by pipeline.
Okay, and they actually provided the fuel for K.I. Sawyer, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah. What has this affected Little Bay du Nac at all?
There is groundwater, contaminated groundwater that is entering into the bay. Mm-hmm. There have been samples collected, and the waters of Little Bay du Nac, right offshore at that location, are being impacted above what's called above the regulated water quality criteria.
Okay.
Now, when we talked about PFAS compounds not being able to be regulated in drinking water, that's not true for surface water issues. There is a regulatory number for discharge to surface water of those two particular PFAS compounds that we were talking about.
Okay. Okay. I've seen a couple of other waterways mentioned. One was the Menominee River, and another was one near Escanaba. I'm not certain what the which one it is, but the I was going to say is, you know, do you know of other small bodies of water near these sites that are affected, besides Little Bay and Nock?
Silver Lead Creek.
Silver Lead Creek is the one.
Correct. Yeah, there's a fish advisory for Silver Lead Creek based on sampling of fish.
Okay, and that's actually what you know, where it leads from this, you know, from possible effects in water is there have been fish advisors, and I know of at least one on PFAS, but are they are there any in the Upper Peninsula?
Just the one that Patrick just mentioned.
Silver Lead Creek.
Just the one
yeah,
Silver Lead
for
Creek.
Brook trout, I believe it's 2 servings a month.
Okay.
Is the recommended consumption.
Okay. What's been done to alert nearby residents to what's there and what's going on to fix it in these couple of sites?
I don't know of anything other than what might be reported in newspapers been done as far as the Escanaba Defense Fuel Site down near Escanaba, because we don't have any evidence of any impact anywhere out in the bay other than right immediately offshore.
I see. Okay.
And there aren't any drinking water intakes in that immediate area. The nearest drinking water intake is the city of Escanaba, which is about 3 miles downshore, and the city of city of Gladstone, which is about 5 miles upshore.
Okay.
And at Silver Lead Creek, which is by K.I. Sawyer, there have been some forums sponsored at the airbase by the Air Force.
Yeah, at K.I. Sawyer, they have what's called a Restoration Advisory Board meeting annually, and it's open to the public, and they advertise that, and the community participates. And in those meetings, the Air Force covers all their remediation efforts for different projects on that base in detail.
Okay.
And, you know, I guess I'd like to mention, too, that with regard to Sawyer, the Air Force seems to have been a little bit preemptive on the PFAS issue. They had begun testing for it on their own properties before it really became an issue, a more widespread issue in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know there's been a lot of pressure from Michigan U.S. Senator Gary Peters, pressure on the Air Force to take to seem to own this problem a little more than they do right now. Apparently, there's some resistance coming from the at first from the Secretary of the Air Force, and then from other people apparently in the administration. So. You know, that's something we can look forward to down the road, perhaps. I know Wordsmith Air Force Base was the one that Peter seemed to be most concerned with. That's considered the poster location for PFAS in Michigan. Why is that?
Wordsmith Air Force Base was the first site in Michigan where we identified PFAS contamination of the groundwater that was impacting resources off base.
I see.
And it has impacted a number of private citizens' water supply wells.
Okay.
It's also impacted a nearby marsh, and it's impacted the deer population in that marsh.
Okay.
And it's also impacted Lake Van Etten. You have what's now happening in Lake Van Etten is what's called foaming, and we get the foam builds up from the PFAS, the surfactant, and then it washes up on people's beaches. They aren't happy about it, as you can imagine. So and
it's not the only kind of foam out there, though, is it?
No, it's not the only kind of foam out there. But if you ever saw this coming up on your beach, I don't think you'd like it.
Okay, Betty, whitewater clients are probably testing for safety and information related to permitting and the like. What happens for the client in a case like this, where you know there's some concern for safety?
Well, I just wanted to mention the foam issue a little bit because I think people are becoming very alarmed when they see the pictures down by Wordsmith and they see the lakes and the rivers. And up here in the UP, we have a lot of tannin-stained water. Think of Tequamanon Falls, for example, the root beer water and the foam that occurs at the bottom of the falls.
Okay.
And that's just a naturally occurring foam that is a result of this contaminants, these organic materials in the water that's getting roiled up with air and creating this very persistent, light, and non-slimy kind of material.
Okay.
People see this on their beaches up here all the time if there's been a heavy wind or they might see windrows of this and they get concerned. They get concerned because they've seen it at Wordsmith. And they get concerned because it might not be PFAS, but it might be their neighbor's washing machine or something like that. But I guess I do want people to understand that in our highly stained waters, the tannin waters that have the organic material, that this can also be a naturally occurring salty material.
Okay. What happens for a client in a case where they don't seem to be completely assured of the safety of their water?
Well, I think if they proceed with testing and they get results, they need to go to the agencies, the MDQs and the health departments, and let them know what these results are, and then proceed on from there.
All right. We've got just a little time left. Patrick, public health departments frequently have home testing or screening materials to avert hazards. I think of things like just smoke detectors and that sort of thing. Are there materials or tests residents and homeowners might use to reveal PFAS contamination?
Well, as was mentioned earlier, sampling for PFAS-related chemicals is a pretty technical endeavor, from the collection to the lab analysis. It's expensive, and certified labs are not real prevalent, as I am aware, and Betty can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe there's 18 certified labs in the nation and none in Michigan that can run those actual. There's two in Michigan now?
Two in Michigan.
So it's not real, they're not common. It's not an easy thing to just hand out, like a water collection bottle to a resident and have them collect a sample.
Okay, and no sort of dipstick test or something you can do that would be easy to do. All right, we have about 30 seconds here. You're each involved in public education efforts related to environmental issues and hazards. What's your estimate of the level of understanding out there on PFAS? Want to take that?
I don't think the chemicals and their fate in the environment and their overall health effects are well understood by anybody. By the public, maybe.
And could be overestimated, right?
Could be.
Okay.
Probably the general public is not real informed on PFAS con-